brief news of Swamiji. I think you all know that he has arrived safely and apparently happily in India. He got there and proceeded to head out to the mall. And our store is at the mall, Metropolitan Mall, the Wishing Tree, and then went to have some sort of dinner at one of his favorite restaurants, Tonino's, there. And last night, his time, this morning, our time, he launched this book, Paramahansa Yogananda Biography, in India. So, beautiful. This is really a wonderful book. Great cover. And this is the Indian version of it, and we'll get our American version in 2 or 3 weeks. So, that's fun news. So, this morning, next day, India time, tonight, our time, we're going to talk about the vision of Ananda community. And I'll talk some, and then Devi will also share some thoughts. As I was thinking about this, I was thinking that if I had given this talk 15 or 20 years ago, I probably would have approached it very much differently. I would have looked at more at the form of Ananda, and kind of like a map, I would have predicted where our new centers would be, you know, that we have to have one on the East Coast because we've got a population there, and then India, and we'll need one in Mumbai, and, you know, like a general with a big map and the pins that you stick in it for a territory that you're going to conquer. I would have talked about the vision of Ananda and then the spread of Ananda and the meditation groups. And all of that is true, but it is not the essence of Ananda. We, early in the community's history, we really had a kind of a battle of consciousness where some people were defining Ananda as a place, and others, including Swamiji, were defining it as a movement or as a consciousness. And we actually fought that battle 40 years ago, and the consciousness won. The place existed, but as an extension of that consciousness. And so tonight, what I want to do is talk a little bit more about the essence of what we're doing here. And also, as I say, there are still some seats up here, so don't feel shy. The essence of what we're doing and why we're doing it, more instead of talking about the form of Ananda, talking about the systems of Ananda. If we were taking the body, as I say, 15 years ago, I'd have talked about what we looked like, what clothes we wore, how our appearance was, what it was going to grow into, like a teenager, how he was going to look as he grew up, and so on. I want to talk more interiorly tonight, what the systems are, the skeletal system, the musculature, the organs, the circulation, and especially the nervous system, because that's more the essence of what the community is about. And so the vision of Ananda is going to be the extension of the essence of what Ananda is about. And form will follow that function. But if we approach it the other way and think that the essence of Ananda will be created because we do certain things in the world or certain things on an outer level, we will miss the real lesson of why Ananda exists. So let me start with why does Ananda exist? Ananda exists primarily so that you and I can try to achieve self-realization. If we don't keep that goal firmly in mind, the core of what Ananda is will fall out of it. So how do we achieve self-realization? We achieve self-realization in, we can talk about it in many ways, but the essence of it is that we attune our lives, our hearts, our consciousness to the will of God, and that we attune ourselves to master and his path because he represents for us, the guru represents for the disciple, God in manifest form, who's come to guide his life, to direct his or her life. And so attunement with God and guru is the whole purpose of Ananda's existence. And if we lose that, because it's very, very easy to lose that key concept in the busyness of outward activity and in what we're doing and in the worries and in the challenges and in all the things that life throws at us. In fact, one could almost say that that is the real battle that goes on for the devotee, the battle between us and Maya, Maya throwing at us all of these really, really important, desperately important reasons why we should ignore God and Guru in the spiritual path and pay attention to me. And that reinforces the ego. Our job is to break that delusion and pay attention primarily to our attunement with God and Guru. And in that attunement, there is also a part, and I'm going to talk about this more or less at length in a little bit, there is a very, very strong part of it, which is if we do this work only for ourselves, if we try to achieve self-realization only for ourselves and ignore the part of Master's mission that is sharing it with others, sharing it with the world, we will be out of tune with the Guru as he manifested in this time, in this place, in our life. And consequently, being out of tune with the Guru, we will not make very much spiritual progress. Maybe if we are lucky enough to get to hang around Master in his next life, we don't have an outward mission. I don't know. He said he was going to reincarnate next in the Himalayas and be there with a small band of people. If we get to be in that small band, I don't know whether he's got a trio, a foursome, what exactly he's planning. But if we're there and he's in the Himalayas and all he's doing is kind of like Babaji, being very reclusive and not having much of an outer mission, then we still come back to the core of the essence of it. If we were with him then, we would do what he asked of us at that time, which might be just to meditate and be with him on that level and send out blessings to the world. But in this life, he did not come with that mission. He came with the mission, as he stated in God's Boatman, of coming to help the world. I will come again and again, a trillion times if need be, with bleeding feet, so long as one stray brother is left crying by the wayside. That's what he said he was here for in this life. And being his disciples, attuning our lives with him, we need to attune to that mission in this life that we've been given. And so that is really the core of what we're doing, attuning to God's will through Master. And thank goodness we have Swami, who has so clearly, powerfully elucidated how to be a disciple, how to live a life of attunement with the Guru. And so that is our core group mission. Then we have to ask some questions. If our core mission is to attune to God and Guru and thereby advance spiritually, achieving self-realization, we have to ask the question, does it work? Are we achieving self-realization? Well, I don't know whether anybody has yet achieved self-realization. That's a wiggly question to ask and answer. Are we making progress toward achieving self-realization? That we can answer unequivocally yes, both on an individual and on a group level. As Garrison Keillor might say, in terms of achieving self-realization, Ananda people are all above average. (Clears throat) Davey and I, a week or a couple of weeks ago, spent a week at Lake Tahoe, and it was very interesting. Now, Lake Tahoe is a very nice place. It's physically, aesthetically, in terms of nature, one of the jewels in God's whole creation, one of the prettiest lakes in the world, the deepest lake in this country and maybe in the whole world. If you took the water in Lake Tahoe and spread it out over the state of California, it would flood California 3 feet deep. So it's a powerful place to be, beautiful scenery. We did a lot of hiking and biking and got up in the Tahoe Rim Trail where you can walk along and see the lake and a big vista. It was beautiful on that level. Spiritually, Lake Tahoe is a dud. And frankly, it's one of the better places. So if Tahoe has dudness to recommend it, think of the rest. It goes downhill from there. And why is it? I could feel in meditation, here we don't realize how powerful the magnetism, the spiritual magnetism is. I think I forget about it. And it takes getting away and then coming back to realize it. But the reason for it, Swami has explained with such a beautiful illustration, that magnetism, spiritual magnetism, is like the molecules in a bar of iron. An unmagnetized bar of iron has the magnetism, the molecules, all pointed in random directions. And because they're all in random directions, the north-south polarity all cancels each other out. That's exactly what was happening at Lake Tahoe. Everybody was seeking happiness in a random direction. Some people thought they would be happier if they jet skied every day. Didn't matter about the noise and the ramifications of it. Others thought, I don't know what they thought, but, you know, there's Nevada there, and they thought gambling was going to make them happy. And at any rate, probably out of however many people up there, tens of thousands, there were tens of thousands of answers to the question, how can I achieve happiness? And those random, not that they were bad, these were not by and large, you know, downward pulling criminal kinds of people. They were there to have fun. They were there to kind of relax and be uplifted by and large. It was just that it was all random and had no spiritual direction to it. Coming back to this community, I could feel immediately the enormous spiritual magnetism where you have a group, a large group of people who are sincerely dedicated to aligning their consciousness, their magnetism, their north-south direction with the north-south direction as demonstrated and taught by the guru who is in complete attunement with God. Now that creates a radically different environment spiritually than any place that's not doing that. But it isn't enough just to say we're doing the will of God, because I would venture to say that many of the people in the Taliban feel that they're doing the will of God in whatever their activities are, in forcing others to act and believe and behave the way that they are. So simply thinking that we're doing the will of God is not enough of a proof of concept. That's why we have to look around. We have to ask the question, is it really working? Is the life at Ananda working to help you and me achieve self-realization, or at least achieve progress on that? And if we can't honestly and objectively answer yes to that, we have to question what we're doing. But fortunately, at least for myself, I can honestly and objectively answer very enthusiastically, yes, this life does work in that goal. And so then, if that's working, then our prime job, our prime directive, one might say, is to dedicate as well as we possibly can. Every one of us will have our individual challenges. We have our individual karmas. We have our individual mindsets. We have our individual kinks and blockages. But each one of us, within those self-created karmic tendencies, should really work on trying to attune your life as well as possible, as you understand it, to the will of Master. If you do that as an individual, your life will be worthwhile. If we do it as a whole community of individuals, our lives collectively will not only be worthwhile, they will have the power to change the world, because that's what Master came to do. He came to introduce the right way of living for Dwapara Yuga, and he wanted very much that groups of people live to demonstrate that. Many of you have probably not heard the aims and ideals, and I haven't read them for years and years until tonight, but I wanted to read so that we could hear about communities, but then I decided, heck, they're not that long, let's read the whole list. So here's what Master said his aims and ideals were, and this is essentially why he incarnated. So think about whether Ananda is doing what it can to carry out these things. To disseminate among the knowledge of the nations a knowledge of definite scientific techniques for attaining direct personal experience of God. Last year, through the internet, we disseminated to approximately 202 different nations the ideals and techniques, the definite scientific techniques for attaining direct personal experience of God. To prove the practical truth in the immortal teachings of Jesus Christ and of the self-realized masters of India. The practical truth is the experimental laboratory that Ananda represents. And it's very, very important that that be lived and experimented with and demonstrated and proved, as Master said. To point out the one highway to God on which all bypaths of religious beliefs meet, the highway of daily scientific meditation to attain divine communion. Daily scientific meditation. There are many, many, many in this room who have not missed daily scientific meditation for years and decades. And so I'd say, yes, we can check that off. Are we doing it as deeply as it can be done? No. We have a lot of work to do on ourselves and to work on that. But at least we're working at it. To heal and liberate man from his threefold suffering, physical disease, mental inharmonies, and spiritual ignorance. I'm not going to comment on everyone. To attain threefold perfect development, body, mind, and soul. To demonstrate the superiority of the mind over body, of soul over mind. To further a spiritual and cultural understanding between East and West, and to promote an exchange of their finest distinctive features, to harmonize science and religion through study and practical realization of the unity of their underlying principles. And here's a really important one for us, to spread a spirit of brotherhood among all peoples and to aid in establishing in many countries self-sustaining world brotherhood colonies for plain living and high thinking. To overcome evil by good, sorrow by joy, cruelty by kindness, ignorance by wisdom, to serve mankind as one's larger self. So those are his aims and ideals. And I would say that obviously, we have to continue to work to perfect our attunement with that and our discipleship and being a channel for those aims and ideals to come into the world. But I would also say that there's not a single one there that this community is ignoring, nor really attempting to do as well as possible. Okay, so the first and foremost thing, our prime directive, as I said, is to attune ourselves, our individual and community, collective will, to God and Guru. The second thing that is important about Ananda is that we are here in order to serve other people. Partly because if we don't serve other people, we will not be able to achieve the attunement with God and Guru that we want to have. Now, this sounds now, well, of course, Ananda is here to serve other people. But we had to fight this battle in the early years of the community. Swami came, he bought the land at the meditation retreat, and he established a meditation retreat. But within the first 3 or 4 months after that, after Swami had moved, he moved in April, I did too, April of 1969, right away we had to look for and purchase the new land. We took possession of this property on July 4th, 1969. And so from April to July is not a very long time to have kind of a work just, and even the work there wasn't just for ourselves. It was a meditation retreat. But as soon as we got the land here, it became obvious that what we were doing was working on establishing these communities. But the first group of people here did not necessarily want to attune themselves to these aims and ideals. There was actually a meeting of a small group of people in the first summer that we were here, in which they got together and voted among themselves and decided that we should sell most of the land because it was a burden to have this much land, and all they really wanted was to have about 30 people here. Talked it over, decided that 30 was the nice number for a tribe, and that's what Ananda should be. And so the consciousness of this place is a place, and it is for us who live here, had to be battled against. We don't have that much anymore, but there are still, that's part of Maya, and it still has little inroads into our thinking, that Ananda is a place, and that what we really ought to concentrate on is fixing it up really nicely. And that it's kind of a bother to have to be putting out so much energy to have people coming here and to have all of the things that we do. Well, it's not a bother. It is our reason for existing. Again, if Master had come and said that what we needed to do was to build the ideal community here and not worry about any of the society outside, then that would be what we should be doing. But his aims and ideals don't reflect that kind of thinking. He was very, very much reaching out to the world. And so the prime reason, one might say, or the work of Ananda is reaching out to the world and spreading these teachings and this way of life as widely as possible. Now, if we just try to do that and we don't live it from inside, that reaching out doesn't have any power. And I have been a participant in years ago in a number of gatherings of people trying to start communities or wanting to start communities or writers talking about starting communities and so on. And they weren't living their talk. So they didn't know what they were talking about. They talked about what they didn't know quite eloquently. I'll give them that. But it had no reality and it had no power behind it. I remember one time we went and this man was a fairly well-known writer of the day. And he was talking about how he was starting this community. And he'd had most of the, he'd gathered the names of most of the people that he needed in his community, but he needed somebody who was an expert in biology and creating foods through algae. And he was still looking for that person. And then when he got that person, he'd pretty much filled up his checklist, and then he could get started on actually doing the community. Well, of course, it never came into existence. Another time a writer came, and he was going around from community to community interviewing, and he ended up writing a book. He was a former resident of Findhorn, ended up writing a book on communities. But after he came here and interviewed some people and saw Ananda, he talked about our community was basically focused on business. And the other communities he praised quite highly, but we came off sounding kind of dull and unimaginative. And I said to Davey after I read that, he came looking for a unicorn and found a workhorse and couldn't understand it. And he wrote about a lot of unicorns, but most of those unicorns don't exist on this earth anymore. So what keeps us going? What keeps our longevity? Not that you and I are so brilliant. It's because we're in tune with Master and he empowers everything. But we will not achieve and continue that attunement if we don't serve humanity in the dynamic manner in which he talked about. And so we have most of the people employed by the church, by the community, their whole job is to serve other people, the Expanding Light, the Sangha office. Next week, we're going to have a guest presenter who did such a wonderful job yesterday morning that we decided that everybody had to hear his little description. So come next week and you'll have a treat. A guest presenter will present a very, very interesting picture of our outreach and service to humanity. But that service to humanity is a very, very important part of the reason for Ananda's existence, and we can't lose sight of that. We haven't lost sight of it, and I'm not saying this as a corrective or as a shaking the finger or anything like that. We're doing, in my estimation, a wonderful job at this, but we have to continue to do that. And then when we do new things, we have to do them in such a way that we, as we do them and as we learn, we share them with others. When we get into permaculture, we have to not just have little permaculture gardens for ourselves so we can eat these luscious fruits and vegetables, but we have to show how that can be done so others coming here. Our building methods, we have to show how we can do them. Ananda is an experiment and a living laboratory of how to take these teachings out of the ether and actually live them and apply them. And so our schools have to be open, more than open. They have to not only serve the children that come to them, but they have to take the ideal of education. We have to try to move the ideal of education as powerfully and as deeply as we can and share it with the world. We have just starting up, many of you, probably most of you know about it, but some don't. We have a new foundation that we have organized. We're just getting it through the legal processes, but it's a foundation for a new tomorrow. And it will take all of the, one might say, non-religious aspects of Ananda. So education, nature, joyful arts, community, sustainability, those kinds of aspects, put it under one foundation and then seek grants in order to expand and deepen and share those things with the world. Because what we're experimenting with, remember the core of it, is that we're attuning ourselves to Master. Master was the avatar for Dwapara Yuga. By attunement with him, if we're doing it right, he will guide us into things that can be enormously helpful for humanity at this time, can be life-saving, consciousness-changing, soul-expanding things that we're doing for humanity. And if we can continue to expand and share those, then another aspect of the vision of Ananda is that we need to continue to experiment, and we need to continue to honor and implement diversity. We do not want to get into the rut that so many organizations, especially ones that have been around a few decades, and I'm not naming names, get into a rut where they just continue to do the same thing in the same way, and they see change as being basically a threat. We have to see change and experimentation as an opportunity, not a threat. Now, we have to be very orthodox and conservative in terms of the core teachings. We can't experiment in new ways with Kriya and go out and forget what Master taught us and teach Kriya in a new way. We can't take the techniques that have been taken and refined and made pure over millenniums and think that new American technology is going to make them better. There's a lot of the yoga world out there that's doing that. There's a battle that goes on in the yoga world to keep tradition in the mix, because they're basically wanting to do something that's popular, and that desire for popularity drives the consciousness of changing it and adapting it so that it's more digestible. We have to be very conservative and orthodox in terms of what we teach. How we teach it, that's different. There, we not only should be allowed creativity, we have to have creativity in how we explain it, how we address it, and how we help people to understand it. Moreover, we have to continue to experiment very dynamically with how to take these teachings and live them. There's this talk about the blueprint in the ether. Let me say, from my understanding, there is no blueprint in the ether. At the very best, there's a kind of a fuzzy owner's manual up there, which says, here are some tools, here's how you operate them, but there's no blueprint that says you dig here, you fill this with cement, you build this way, here's the wall. The early American architects, they, Frank Lloyd Wright and the others, my dad was an architect, so I know some of this stuff, they would go so far as to design the hardware that went on the drawers. They would design the cabinets, the hardware, the drawers, the hinges, of course the whole building. That was a blueprint. You did that blueprint and you did it exactly as they said. I haven't seen any blueprint like that from Master. His blueprint is basically kind of like Swami's drawing, Swami's blueprint for this building, which was on a note card that size, and it had a little outline shape of the building, and he said, go build it. That's different from a blueprint that lays out everything. The point I really want to make is that Ananda needs to keep experimenting with things. The world is going to face new challenges. We're going to go into new areas. We're going to find new and better ways of doing things, and we need to continue to desire and promote change and new ways of expressing these core teachings and ideas. If we don't, we're going to ossify, and ossification will not serve Master's mission. Now, Ananda is doing this in part by creating a lot of diversity. What do I mean by that diversity? Here at Ananda, we have overlaid, at Ananda Village, we have overlaid a whole bunch of different economic patterns. You can be an entrepreneur and own your own business. You can have a business that's kind of community business, but not really a community business. You can have a task or a job that's in a completely Ananda-owned business. In here we work on a certain kind of you work, you get your wages system. In Italy, we're trying a different system. You work, you get room and board and a little spending money. In India, we're trying yet a different kind of thing. See, we have to keep experimenting with these different ways of doing things, because just like clothing, one size does not fit all. One kind of community does not fit all devotees. One expression does not fit the world at large. And we have to have a lot of diversity in order to show models to people that work for what they want. And so that continued experimentation and diversity is, again, one of the core aspects of Master's mission and, therefore, of what we're doing. And that continued creativity has to be carried on and fostered. And I just wanted to end with a few kind of specifics of where I see us going in the next 5 years or so. There are going to be new communities. We already have, within the last 2 years, we have Pune that has, as they would say in India, has coming up very nicely. The first residents have moved into the housing that was built for them. They have an operating retreat that has been constructed and is working. They have probably 10 houses now. By the end of the year or early next year, they will have maybe 15 more houses, so they'll have 20 or 25 houses. Indian families will be living there, and it will be a full-blown, real, active, creative, functioning community, not just thought in the ether. The work in northern India is progressing. They have now, I think, about 40 Indian teachers who have been trained, gone through a whole series of classes, and are out teaching meditation and different Ananda-related techniques all throughout the northern India area, some in their own native languages of Hindi and other languages. So it's spreading very fast there. L.A. is really not quite a community, but also not just a center. It's kind of a quasi-community, and it's increasing in size. It will become a community. And Laurelwood, outside of the community in Portland, has roughly doubled the number of rooms that Ananda has. Now that's a new community for you. At its height, it had 500 students and 60 staff living on the property that we now have. And so that is a huge, beautiful project that's increasing. So the creation of new communities, as I said, years ago I would pick a map and stick some pins in and say where we're going to create the others. I have no idea where the others are going to be created. Maybe Divine Mother knows, but she has not deigned to let any of us know. So it'll be according to where the energy and the desire for that new expression. Basically, enough people have to tune in to the will of Divine Mother to shout pretty loudly, you've got to come here, you've just got to come here, and create a community. And then if we have the ability, we'll try to respond to that. So creation of new communities, that's going to continue, and it's going to be very important. The expansion of different modes of communication is going on right now and is going to increase dramatically. Right now, we're reaching over 1,000 people a day through the web, new individual people through the web. But we're also reaching out through the new social media, Facebook and Twitter, and I don't even know this stuff. We've got to have young people coming here who can translate it for us and tell us what a tweet is. And so, but the means and ability to communicate is going to expand and reach out in the next 5 years. I think a time is coming, has come actually, and is in the early stages, where there's going to be much more desire and activity that goes toward networking with other communities. We're seeing it already in the young people and in the connection that has grown up with Cité Écologique recently, but I think that is going to continue. And I think in the next 5 years, we will have real, actual, and deep connections with a number of communities. I've been in a lot of contact over the last 2 or 3 months with a man named Guy Finley, a fairly popular author, New Age author. He has a small community in Oregon, and he's published a book, and we're helping along promote it and to spread the word. And it's basically a book showing the unity among all religions in terms of time, place, different religions, by quoting the instead of just parallel passages of the Gita and the Bible, this is parallel passages found in the teachers and teachings of all religions to show the unity of them, and we're cooperating. But I think cooperative efforts like that are going to spring up and continue to accelerate, and we will have to possibly in the next 5 years make the transition to an Ananda that is existing after Swamiji's passing. I don't see that as being anything that we can prepare for more than what we're already doing, but it's a reality that we're going to have to face. Finally, let me say that just as a kind of a growth of Ananda, that we spent quite a number of years, decades, I would say, mostly up until, it's never definite, it's not like this phase ends and the next phase, but I would say the first 30 years or so of the community had to do with survival. We had to build some buildings, we had to figure out businesses, we had to figure out jobs, meditation, we had to fight these early battles, we had to figure out how Ananda was going to survive. If you look at this building, it's an example of the very, very best that we could do in the early years of Ananda. It was like a generation ahead of its time. Nonetheless, nice though it is, it's not an elegant, beautiful, highly technological building. It is what it is. So that first phase was survival. Then we have already moved in to a time where we're not just trying to survive. We're trying to do things really well. We're trying to garden really well. We have a state-of-the-art phone system, a state-of-the-art water system. And so some of the systems that we're doing, we're trying to not just do them adequately, but do them really well. But we're moving into a phase where we're going to have to seek for true excellence so that Ananda becomes not just kind of playing catch-up, but we innovate and we show the world how to do things because we're the best at it in the world. So that achievement of excellence is still on the horizon, but that's one of the movements that we're going to need to work toward. We have it already in many ways in kind of early form. Our educational system, it is an excellent educational system, but we need to refine it and to spread it. Communities, nobody does communities that I know of as well as Ananda does, but we need to refine it some more and communicate it more. And so anyway, without going through a whole laundry list, one of the movements into the future will be the movement from doing things adequately to do that. We have to do that on the level of consciousness and on the level of attunement of a life led in attunement with God.
To tell you a little secret. Last year we didn't do these classes because we were in LA, but whenever it comes time to do these classes, it's always really thrilling for us because I never really know what we're going to talk about. And then every year, it's like for each of these classes, there's a flow of clarity and grace and inspiration, and I know it's not coming through us. It's coming, Master wants us as a community, as this incredible configuration of devotees to keep inspired in what we're doing, not let the energy get drained out into the diversity, not in the way Jyotish was talking about it, but in all the complexity of what we're doing, but to pull it up from a string and be able to look down and say, oh yes, let's not lose sight of the bigger picture in all the little problems of daily life. Let's keep the big picture. And as Jyotish was saying in reading the aims and ideals, that it is one big picture. But this is what we have chosen to do. It's why we incarnated. And what I'm going to talk about now is these ideas just have been kind of percolating around in my mind in the last couple of weeks. But it started with a seed thought. I was thinking about Master, which I try to do as much as I can. And I thought, how curious he chose the name Yogananda. And, you know, I heard that name 1969 when somebody handed me Autobiography of a Yogi, and I never gave it much thought. Yogananda, yeah, he wrote that book. And what was the name of the book? Autobiography of a Yogi. And I began in the last couple of weeks thinking about that. That Yogananda, bliss through yoga, he called his major work Autobiography of a Yogi. That's what he was trying to get us to understand. I forget who I am. I am bringing you joy through yoga, and I have been a yogi, and that's what you all need to do. And then we come back to the question. I was just thinking about all that. Well, what did that mean to him, Yogananda? Why did he choose that name? And then, I mean, we've all had these courses over and again. Yoga means union. Union of the soul with God, union of the individual with something greater. And yoga has another meaning. It's the scientific techniques to achieve that state of consciousness. So union with God is the what, the scientific techniques are the how we go about finding that. And of course the premier technique for us is Kriya Yoga. And Swamiji chose the name Kriyananda. Joy through the practice of Kriya Yoga. I mean, it's so connected. It was like, wow, breath is amazing. And then also, so yoga is the union. It's the how to do it through scientific techniques. But it's also, yoga is the classic definition, it's the neutralization of the vortices of feeling. So it's overcoming the likes and the dislikes. And we might say that's how it's, that's the impact on how we interact with the world. That we begin saying, you know, what I want isn't so important. But one of Ananda's sort of underlying guidelines, what's trying to happen here? And we see this played out 100 times a day throughout our community. It's not what individuals want. It's not what makes me happy. It's not what I want in my little wish list. It's what's the neutralization of all those eddies of ups and downs and ups and downs. And then, so that's sort of the what yoga is. But then how does it come down to how we act in the world? Well, if we can start seeing that through the practice of yoga and through moving towards that goal, that there's one reality that underlines everything, and we're all part of that, and we're not in competition for it. It permeates who we are and everything around us, and we start living that lifestyle. And what comes out of that? World Brotherhood colonies. And so it's just like this giant funnel which starts with joy through yoga and practicing the techniques and realizing that through practicing them, we become, as Master said, even-minded and cheerful. And then going forth in crowded ways and seeing there's just one reality underneath this all, and you're no different from me, and I'm no different from you, and what makes you sad is going to make me sad. And if I hurt you, I'm hurting me. And if I take away from the dairy to amplify something else, then that's across purposes. So it all has to be unified. And Swami wrote this wonderful book, Cities of Light, A Plan for This Age. And there it is, and it sits on our shelf, 1987, kind of yellow and dinged up, but it's a plan for this age. How many of you have read it? You don't have to raise your hands. But this is, when he, in the mid to late 80s, Swami began writing many, many books, and it was when Crystal Clarity Publishers was born, and they were all woven together with this theme of crystal clarity. And this is what he says in the first chapter of Cities of Light. To live in crystal clarity means to see oneself and all things as aspects of a greater reality, to seek to enter into conscious attunement with that reality, and to see all things as channels for the expression of that reality. So three things. See all things as aspects of a greater reality, to be in attunement with that greater reality, and to see all things as channels for the potential to express that reality. And if you look at our community, that's what's going on here. And Swami wrote, at that period of his life, he wrote so many books to help us get it. He wrote a book about money magnetism, which has also evolved into the new Akash lessons and the Success and Happiness course, which helps us to see it's all energy. How can there ever be a lack when we understand that there's only one reality? And what Divine Mother's storehouse is infinite. And when we try to think, oh no, it's only about my checkbook, or it's only about the checkbook for my business, we get all tied up in knots and we get contractive. But when we think there's money and success and happiness, it's all based on a greater reality. And then we relax and we breathe. You know, we had an interesting experience some years ago. And this was in the time when Ananda was even more hard up for money than it is now. And we would get our little paychecks, and it would just about make it to the next paycheck. It was before anybody had credit cards and nothing to fall back on. And Swami said to a group of us, about 12, let's take a vacation to Hawaii. And I just had enough money to buy the groceries every month. Really, that was all. And I thought, how is this possible? But Swami is in such a flow of the underlying reality. We didn't have credit cards. So we said, okay, let's go to Hawaii. And I don't know how it happened. But we paid for our tickets. We paid for the hotel in Hawaii. We had 2 weeks in Hawaii. We came back, and there was still the same amount in my checkbook. And I couldn't figure it out, and I still can't figure it out. I mean, it was like he was teaching us, and somehow the universe got wiggly. But it was like he was trying to say, this is how you can live if you see yourself as part of a greater reality, and you understand that you can channel that greater reality, and to see everything's an expression of that. He wrote at that same time, Education for Life. And people are just beginning to understand what that is. Nishal and Nakul are up in Laurelwood right now working with the group up there, with the campus, with Usha, and we're just starting to be able to see this could be big. This could be really big. And with this Foundation for a New Tomorrow that Jyotish was mentioning, Geeta McGilloway, Willow, David Dasi, and others of us have been working on it, the potential for drawing funds that are not taking it from anything else, new tomorrow, it's incredible. So Swami wrote that book, and the premise of it is, same thing. Don't look at a system, but look at the individual. Look at that individual as part of a greater reality. And how can you help an individual child move from where they are right now to their full potential? Not saying we want them to be a Montessori student or a Waldorf student or all these other systems, but simply when you meet the kids that have come out of this system, they are the individual, strong human beings filled with diversity. No two of them, someone asked us, well, are your children do this? Do they do that? And we said, they do it all. Some have gone this way. Some have gone that way. There's nothing we're trying to cookie cut them out and say, this is what they should be. And so, again, this is the yoga. Ananda is a full yogic lifestyle community. And everything that exists here is an expression of those principles. Swami also wrote Art of Supportive Leadership at that time. Same thing, where he's showing there isn't a separation between who's a leader and who's on the team. It's all about seeing it as moving forward of energy. And Cities of Light, of course, at that time, and on. But underneath it all, this is the kind of the insight that came to me. We are living a yogic lifestyle. And that doesn't just mean we come to morning meditation. It means that we see everything we do with the vision of yoga. Unity, greater reality, harmony, expansiveness, and inner freedom and joy. And you can see this throughout the community. This lunchtime today, I was driving down to the market. And you know how sometimes, I don't know if this happens to you, it happens to me often. It's like something, a very simple human activity will be going on, and you see it and you realize that it's a part of something so much greater. And there on the village green under a big tree was Sarah Brink being very centered in herself, but you could also almost see her aura just filling all space. She had a big easel, and there was a little girl, a young girl with her. I couldn't see who it was because her back was turned. She had long hair, and Sarah was teaching her how to paint. And it was so beautiful. And I thought, this is the yogic lifestyle. Have your consciousness fill the space around you and then bring others along to enjoy your experience. It was just beautiful. It was beautiful to see that little moment that was just captured there. And so all of these ways that we've been able to express in everything we do, in our businesses, in our government, in our leadership. Expansive Marriage was another book that Swamiji wrote at this time. Same thing, where he's saying, don't look at the form, look at the yoga of it. Look at the union of it. Look at the soul growth from it. His book, the title has changed, but at that time it was Expansive Marriage, A Guide to Self-Realization. Not so you'll be happy and, you know, all this. A Guide to Self-Realization. So understand and try, as a community, to live with crystal clarity so that we are understanding this community is a model for the yogic lifestyle in hundreds and hundreds of different expressions. Our tulip festivals, I think that the tulips and the energy that went into creating those gardens was the best sermon we could ever have given. People came and saw those flowers and those gardens and that beauty, and they got it. They got what Ananda was, and they came just to look at the flowers, but they said, who are you people? And they knew there was something underneath it that didn't meet the eye. And that's what the magic of this place. You know, if you want, we celebrate, and we will celebrate this year in July, the anniversary of the communities movement. This year, actually, we're going to combine it because it's the 40th year anniversary of the first Ananda Living Wisdom School. We've been doing these schools for 40 years. And so this 4th of July, we're going to be also celebrating that. But really, if you think about it, to trace the origin of Ananda, I'd call it 1861, when Babaji said to Lahiri Mahashaya, you know, I've received Kriya. I have to go back to the world now. But there's so many sincere men and women living lives that they cannot find God in their daily life. Can't you break down the restrictions and let me give this to any sincere seeker? And Babaji said, God has spoken through you. Let your words be my will. And from then on, Kriya Yoga began being disseminated. Yoga, the scientific practices of yoga, the vision of a unified world, where is it going in the future? I think, as Jyotish said, we will start to see that we are not an island. For so long, Ananda has seemed a little bit like an island. But from some of the young people, we just, David Kretzman, I think, will be one of the ambassadors of the new communities movement. He's planning to come back to our Ananda College next semester, and he wants to help co-create a course on communities and where young people can come and learn how and why and where and how to disseminate it. And so it's and I know when Peter, David, with Nitai's class, went to this community in Quebec, Cité Écologique, it was like this revelation for them because they said, we're not the only ones doing this. And I think we will start to realize the future is that it isn't little one island or separate islands, but it's the peak of this huge land mass that's starting to rise up out of the ocean of delusion. And people are starting to say, wow, this isn't about a few people living on gravel roads. And you know, we always knew that. I remember the very first day I came to Ananda, I was on the property. There was nothing, 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 nothing. And I just thought, something big is going to happen here. You could feel it from day one. And part of it was Swamiji carrying Master's vision, but it's the will of this incredible line of gurus that Kriya Yoga needs to come out into the world, and people need to see how Kriya Yogis run a market, how they run a school, how they fix water pipes, how they take care of chickens. They need to, and I'm not saying this to belittle it. I mean it with all the sincerity of my heart. If we can't live it in a daily way, then we are not fulfilling the mission of the masters, because that's the vision they brought. And so to realize our community is very big. You are a citizen. In Pune, they're calling it the first Kriya Yoga community in India. That works for India because, you know, but I think if we would call it that here, it would seem limited. We have to live it, but we don't need to say it. So we're simply Ananda, and we're the child of Yogananda. We are the bliss of the yoga that he embodied. And I just wanted to close by reading Living Wisely, Living Well, last day of the year, December 31st. This is what Swami tells us. Develop a sense of community with others. No one in this world stands alone, though in many ways the opposite seems true, since we come into this life alone and must leave it again at death, quite alone. Yet we come into a welcoming family and should so live our lives that others weep when we leave this world. Everything we do in our solitary seeming comings and goings depends to a great extent on others. Expand your sense of community to include an ever larger number of people until you see everyone on earth as belonging to your own family in God. And that's what Ananda is. And that's what we've come to do. And that's what, thanks to God, we are doing with great beauty and great power and great joy. That's all.
And see you Saturday in the demonstration.
Yes, yes, 8:30 at Masters at the Market Green. And next week we will be talking on work and service and outreach. And as Jyotish mentioned, we will have a very entertaining special guest.